This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Paul Lemo. Paul is the Vice President for Strategy and Business Development at Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions. And Paul, I'm going to refer to it as IS&GS for most of the show. Is that okay?
Or
Lockheed, one of the two interchangeably. But welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. I'm excited to be here and to chat with you and your audience today.
I'm looking forward to it. I know the audience is looking forward to it. And we have a lot of ground to cover today. But first, I wanted to talk about a little bit about you and get your background. And I know you're a veteran of the federal marketplace. Can you give the listeners a little bit about your background, your career at Lockheed Martin, how you got into procurement? That's always interesting to hear from folks.
Yeah, thanks. I've had the great fortune to work for Lockheed Martin and its predecessor companies for about 25 years. Started basically right out of school as an engineer and got to work on some advanced command and control and sensor systems, primarily for the U.S. Navy. And then as I continued to grow with the company, became an engineering manager, a project manager, and then eventually worked my way over to business development, as I really liked being on the front end of the business and helping to drive the strategy of whatever organizational unit I was in at the time. But, you know, most of my experience up until about a year and a half ago was spent in our electronic systems business, which is about a $14 billion segment of Lockheed Martin. And it was working on, as I said, you know, command and control systems, weapon systems, radar and laser sensors.
Yeah, things like going ships and that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Like, okay.
Yeah. So, in fact, one of my last assignments was working on the Littoral Combat Ship program,
okay.
Which has
That's interesting
certainly
program.
Been discussed quite a bit in the market space. And that program, of course, today is very successful. It's in production. But about a year and a half ago, was asked to move over to IS&GS and begin working in the information industry. And this has been quite an exciting challenge for me, learning about the information technology and just the breadth of our business space there. You know, we're about a $9 billion organization. We serve really all the entities in the federal government, from the civil agencies, DOD, the primary intelligence agencies in the U.S. We have business really all over the world, particularly focused in the U.K. and Australia, but we do business in a number of countries. And, you know, what we do is provide information, advanced information systems for those customers in the mission space, as well as enterprise IT. We do complex command and control systems. You know, for example, we build the C2 BMC system, which does all the integration of missile defense sensors and weapon systems for the Missile Defense Agency. So IS&GS is the primary developer of the what's called the Command and Control Battle Management System.
So how, you know, in terms of your market, is it primarily defense, or do you, on the civilian side, what is that mix?
Yeah, no, we're actually about evenly split, a third, a third, a third. So we, in the civil space, we are about 30% of our sales, and DOD is about, you know, 30, and the intel community is about 30. Some of our other focuses, you know, on the civil space, we're really looking at several adjacent areas of healthcare IT, as well as energy efficiency. We can talk certainly more about those. And then,
Absolutely.
Of course, cybersecurity is really pervasive. And IS&GS is the leader within Lockheed Martin for cybersecurity. It's across all three of those domains, civil, defense, and the intel space. We're even now taking some of our cyber solutions into the commercial market to support companies that are really part of the U.S. critical infrastructure. So think of utilities, you know, energy companies, oil and gas, and then also finance and banking industry, which obviously is very susceptible to cyber attacks.
Yeah, so let's focus on cyber for a little while. And I guess one of the questions, you're taking your solutions to the commercial sector as well. Is it who... This is interesting. Who is driving the train? Is it the government need, you know, government requirements and focus on cybersecurity that's sort of pushing, you know, the envelope, or is it the commercial, you know, the commercial sector that's sort of driving solutions? Because, you know, one of the debates in the marketplace is, are, do we rely on commercial solutions to meet our cybersecurity needs, or, you know, it's the same old thing with government, period. You know, it's like unique government requirements versus commercial solutions.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great question. You know, let me just sort of break down the cyber problem a little bit. We call it the 80-20 issue. Basically, you know, 80% of the threats can be solved by off-the-shelf products that really the commercial IT industry are solving, companies like McAfee, Symantec, et cetera. The 20% of the threats are really what are known as advanced persistent threats. And these are campaigns, in a lot of cases, by nation states that are looking to attack particular areas to either, you know, get information, intellectual property, or to, you know, potentially bring down a system and cause disruption, denial, et cetera. The government space and the federal government space is obviously focused on all the threats, but most of the development work, for example, that we do is against that 20% advanced persistent threat. And so there are some, you know, commercial companies looking at that as well and developing solutions. You know, I think in particular that companies like Lockheed Martin have a little bit of an advantage in that because we do work for the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, you know, we have an understanding of the threats at you know, classified levels. We can take that analysis, distill it, develop solutions against those threats that can then be deployed, you know, across the space, if you will, the market space. So really it's that 20% threat that I see those solutions coming out of the government work that's being done. But that can be applied, of course, commercially.
Right. So it sounds like you guys are in a great position in terms of your sort of nexus between the commercials, that 80% solution and what's available commercially that you can utilize, and leveraging that to sort of customize or build those unique solutions that are needed for that 20%. And then you're sort of able to take that, what you just said, I'm just sort of repeating it, but yeah, it's like, and then you leverage it across the entire marketplace, right?
Exactly. I mean, our typical solution, whether it be for the government or for a commercial customer, is going to be a combination of commercial off-the-shelf, you know, software and hardware products combined with some of the unique things that we would develop ourselves based on our knowledge of the threat.
And can you talk a little bit, what are you seeing in terms of Lockheed season as big picture trends in that area, in assurance and cybersecurity?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, certainly within the government, I think every agency now is worrying about this threat and really figuring out how to counter it. Because there's also some other things that are making them more vulnerable. The push to mobility these days, where we want to have applications, you know, at the ready on our mobile devices, just leaves more attack surfaces for the threats to infiltrate. So all the government agencies, you know, typically want to push into having mobile applications.
Or even the idea that's floated now, bring your own device kind of thing to work, as opposed to being provided by an agency, right?
Exactly. And so that's really, you know, one of the drivers that all the agencies are looking at.
Is cloud part of that issue too?
It is. I mean, you know,
challenges.
Absolutely. I mean, you hear the terms public cloud, private cloud, hybrid cloud. You know, all those things, you know, bring some level of vulnerability, if you will, particularly a public cloud. And so customers want to understand, you know, how do we protect that? When you look at commercial industry companies, you know, like a Lockheed Martin or a bank or a utility, they're also watching what's happening out there. You know, you only have to look at the Saudi Aramco incident that happened several months ago, where hackers got in and basically shut down hundreds of their computer systems, and rendered them inoperable for quite a while. when you look at that and you read about all these incidents, companies are coming up on the net saying, you know, we need to assess ourselves. Where are we on the cyber maturity? You know, do we understand the threats? How are we protecting? So those are the kind of services that they're asking for, right, and that companies like us are trying to provide.
Right. So, and Paul, right now, one of the services I have to do is provide for commercials. So right now we do have to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more with Paul Lemo. Paul is the Vice President for Strategy and Business Development at Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions. And we'll continue our discussing cybersecurity, talk about Lockheed Martin's Next Gen Cyber Innovation and Technology Center, and also talk about, you know, I think a little bit, that to me, that goes to future threats, it sounds like. So I'll get some more information about that. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Paul Lemo. Paul is the Vice President for Strategy and Business Development at Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions. And, you know, Paul, when we took the break, we were talking cybersecurity. And one of the, you know, I guess initiatives or, you know, efforts that Lockheed Martin is engaged in is you've developed this or established a next-gen cyber information and technology center. What is that?
Sure. Let me talk a little bit about our next-gen cyber innovation and technology center, or something that we call Insight. The first of its kind really was set up in our Gaithersburg, Maryland facility, which is the headquarters for IS&GS. And really, it's a world-class center designed for cyber research and development, customer and partner collaboration and innovation. And it was, you know, at its time a few years ago, the newest addition to our portfolio of R&D and testing facilities. So this is an area where we prototype new, you know, cyber technologies or technologies to counter the cyber threat. But it's broader than that. We really do all types of IT development there and innovations, you know, whether it be cloud, big data, mobility solutions, and of course, cyber. So again, they get prototyped there. The way we've set up the facility is we have a number of partners that are resident there with us. So companies like HP and Cisco and Juniper Networks and McAfee, NetApp, you know, Microsoft, you name it, they're there. They're working with us side by side. They're bringing their own investments and their latest technologies so that we can work together to create solutions. They're all part of what we call our cyber technology alliance that we've formed with these companies to share innovation, R&D, et cetera. So that goes on there. One of the nice things about that is that co-resident, if you will, with that facility is Lockheed Martin's Security Intelligence Center. This is where we actually operate and protect Lockheed Martin's networks. You know, we're a little bit unique in that Lockheed Martin never made a decision to outsource our IT. We perform.
Okay, so you've got the whole nine yards
networks
there, so to speak, right?
Yeah. So we have, you know, 120 some thousand employees, and we operate all the networks that support those employees, all the desktop computers. We service them. We operate the networks, and so therefore we protect our network. So really, for us, you know, cybersecurity has been in our DNA, if you will, or part of what we do, you know, for the last 10 plus years in protecting our assets, if you will, on the networks. And so new technologies that we develop in the Insight facility can be prototyped and utilized in the Security Intelligence Center. Likewise, the threats and activities that they're seeing in the Security Intelligence Center against our network can be fed back to the designers in the Insight facility to develop new products.
And so you're leveraging, in a sense, you're leveraging what you learn just purely from an operational perspective with the Security Intelligence Center to help you inform solutions or develop solutions, and vice versa, right?
So. Exactly. And as you can imagine, as the largest federal contractor, we are constantly under surveillance and attack from potential adversaries who are trying to get intellectual property and information out of our networks. And so we have had to really become very sophisticated at how we do our cyber defense.
Right. So it's almost fundamental to the your business, it seems to me, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a bit more about one of the things that interests me is, you know, there's always, you know, like we always fight the next war or the last war. That's what I'm saying, the last war. You know, how do these centers, or how do you think about like future threats, or is it one of those things that I'm struggling with the words, but you know, the idea, can you anticipate where technology and threats are going, or is it one of those things that you sort of read and react? Both?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, well,
I don't know if that makes sense.
No,
or
it does, and there's two points I want to make regarding that. First, I wanted to mention that we also have an InSight facility in the UK,
okay.
And we have
mm-hmm.
one in Australia. So, because of the relationship between the governments of the US, the UK, and Australia, and some other countries, there's a lot of sharing of intelligence information, as you can imagine. And so we're able to do, you know, cyber defense work for those countries. And we've set up an InSight facility there. We've set up security intelligence centers, et cetera, to not only defend our networks there, but support those countries. So we're getting a lot of advanced threat information really from around the world. So that's one way we try to stay ahead of the adversary. The other way is that we have trademarked a process called the cyber kill chain. And basically what this is it's, if you take our experience.
First of all, I love that name, okay? Yeah. I like it. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you take our experience in building complex weapon systems, and in weapon systems you always think about sensing, detecting, you know, command and control, and then action on your adversary. We've applied that same theory, if you will, to cyber defense that says, you know, there are basically seven steps that an adversary has to go through to really be successful. Because what they want to do is they either want to disrupt or get information out of your network. And so just the fact that they can get into your network does not mean they're successful. They've got to go through several more steps.
Actions, right?
Yeah. Actions to actually get to their end goal. And so our philosophy is that, of course, we'd like to stop them at the first step, but we may not be able to. If we stop them at the second or the third or the fourth, we're okay, as long as they can't get down to the seventh, you know, end state, if you will. So when we detect them, though, we go through a process to reverse engineer and forward engineer. So reverse engineer, how did they get that far?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Forward engineer, how would they get to the end? So given that they've gotten this far, how would they actually get through command and control, weaponization, if you will, of their software product, and then exfiltration of the data? So by doing that, we sort of can almost
make adjustments, right? To those steps that they didn't accomplish, you can make further adjustments.
Exactly.
To them, right?
Yeah. We can anticipate that even if they solved the step that we caught them at, we sort of know where they were going to go next mm-hmm. and how they would ultimately develop this campaign further. So that kind of keeps us ahead of the step. It's a lot of technical analysis, as you
sure.
can imagine, but this cyber kill chain that we've, you know, briefed around, and again, we've trademarked that and written papers on it, is we think is a great way to view the problem and analyze the problem.
That's great. And I want to shift a little bit and talk about just the federal IT market,
sure.
big picture. And one of the things that obviously, you know, we are in a, you know, fiscal challenges we're facing, and it seems to me one of the key things that government's going to be focusing on is cost savings and just translating that. And I know you mentioned like you're doing work in energy savings area and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, because if you've it's just, you know, I tell companies all the time, if you've got solutions that demonstrate savings to the government, that's going to be moving. It always is, but even more so now, people are going to be focused on how do you make us more efficient?
Yeah. Well, I think, as you know, the federal budgets are facing an extreme challenge, of course. And the IT budgets tend to be the first ones that get hit. You know, and we've already seen that over the last couple of years. The IT budget has, you know, flattened out, beginning to reduce a little bit. But we certainly believe that IT is really a methodology for agencies to save money, to become more efficient. And the ways that they're doing that today are things like the application of the cloud, you know, data center consolidation, just making their data centers more energy efficient.
Sure.
Is another way. And we're, you know, certainly active, as are most companies, in all those areas. You know, we're part of the Federal Energy Management Program, the FEMP program, where there's a lot of data center consolidation efforts going there and trying to have more green IT, if you will.
So, yeah, and Paul, right now we do, it's right up hard on the break, so we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Paul Lemo. Paul is a Vice President for Strategy and Business Development, Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Paul Lemo. Paul is the Vice President for Strategy and Business Development at Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions. And Paul, when we took the break, you were talking a little bit about energy or energy efficiency or just efficiency in general and cost savings. We had started touching on that area, and that's a key concern of government right now. But from your perspective, what else are you hearing from the government customer or across the market? What are they telling you that are their concerns or what they're focusing on or where they're heading? It's sort of three questions in one. So.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, obviously the budget issue is the overwhelming issue of the day, if you will, in government, and how to save money. You know, they're trying to go to IT first to save money so they can, particularly on the DOD side, you know, buy more weapon systems that they need and platforms. But there's really several things as a part of that. I mean, it's not just about getting the lowest contract cost. They've got, you know, some aging IT systems that really, you know, need to be replaced because they're inefficient and in some cases ineffective. And so the question is, can you replace them with more efficient systems, even though you're going to have to spend that upfront money to make that investment? And so, you know, I think they're looking at some new business models, you know, pay by the click for some types of things, which, you know, is certainly new for us. We haven't necessarily done that before. You know, cloud brokerage services of how do you pay for your time utilization on the cloud? Those are some new business models that we're discussing in industry and looking at. Clearly, the commercial IT companies have spent a lot of time thinking about that and have those models. But for those of us that are federal systems integrators, those are some of the new things that we're looking at and how to properly price that, make sure that it's good for the customer and good for industry as well. And then, you know, how to integrate new technologies like big data. I mean, big data holds a lot of promise for, you know, sifting through enormous amounts of data, particularly for the DOD and intelligence communities of, you know, how do they sift through all the information coming back from these sensors that they have deployed in theater and make sense out of it and actionable intelligence? I think when you look at the civil agencies, big data can be applied to the fraud, waste, and abuse problem. Again, if you can sift through, you know, thousands of transactions, millions of transactions, and be able to really hone in on those ones that kind of don't make sense, that might indicate that there's some waste or fraud there. And then we talked a little bit about mobility, which is huge, and that is, you know, get the application out to the user on their mobile device, you know, whether it's ATF agents in the field, FBI agents, or, you know, just anyone else working in the government that needs access from home or somewhere else other than their office. So mobility is playing a big role as well in where these customers want to go.
Sure. You know, in that context, I know you are, and you're one of the biggest government contractor, lots of systems integrations. And I wanted to ask you about strategic alliances and teaming a little bit as well. You know, are you seeing any trends in that area? Are solutions, like, for example, I think of OASIS, that proposed procurement that GSA is doing. Now, I try to think of a company that could theoretically do all the services that they're potentially going to include in the scope of that contract. Are you seeing, you know, more teaming to meet, you know, cross-cutting solutions, or is it, you know, or has it changed that it's more modular? Is there any sense that you have of how, where the market's going?
Yeah. You know, we've been fortunate, Roger, to be the number one federal IT provider to the U.S. government for the last 18 years, as Washington Technology has reported. But despite that, I mean, partnerships and teaming has always been a big part of how we approach efforts for the government, and will continue to be. In fact, I think it is accelerating even more today, where you're seeing more and more partnerships to accomplish the work. You know,
now, is that, I'm just interrupting, sure. I'm sorry, but is that sort of the nature of technology today and how rapidly it changes, that you know there are niche applications or technologies that are developed that have wide uses across commercial and the federal government, and you try to put that all together?
Yes, it's definitely one of the factors. You know, I look at us in the IT space as rapid adopters of commercial technology. You know, companies like HP and Microsoft and Dell, et cetera, and Apple, I mean, they're spending billions and billions of dollars a year to invent new information technologies. What we do is, you know, we really understand our customers' missions, and so we need to rapidly adopt those technologies and figure out how to best use them to solve the government's hard problems. That's what I think we do well. So we'll partner with those companies, and it depends on the technology that they've got, the time at which we're looking to adopt it. That tells us, you know, who the best people are to team with, but it's different on a lot of the procurements.
Can you, from your, you know, experience, can you talk a little bit of what considerations sort of go into developing team, or what, you know, that's sort of one
sure.
question, and what are the attributes of a successful team?
Well, the most important thing is you've got to have complementary skills. You know, we run into problems when everybody...
Some basics there that people forget, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We run into problems when you say, let's put together a great team, you know, that is definitely a winner, but you all have the same skills. And so you're stepping on each other trying to sell your product, and you have four people doing the same thing. So the first thing we look at is it really complementary? How's it going to provide best value to the customer? And also allow us to do what we do best, allow the other companies to do what they do best. So that's kind of how we approach it and put together teams for these procurements.
And are you doing anything with regard to small business in that area that is sort of new or unique? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. We have a large focus on small business. In fact, I have an organization that's part of my strategy and business development team that looks at small business development. So we will work with these companies and help them partner with us, help them bid small business procurements where maybe we can be a subcontractor to them. We mentor them. We provide them a playbook on how to do business with the government. So pretty extensive. I think small business is obviously very important to the government today and the administration. And all of us in industry are working very closely with small businesses.
And I did want to, you know, I'm ticking off my questions here for you, Paul, just areas I want to talk. But I did want to also give you an opportunity to talk about the role of, you know, government-wide contracts, mm-hmm. you know, with IS and GS. And think about, you know the GSA GWACs, the schedules, VA schedules, you know, what role do they play?
Well, an ever-increasing one. I mean, every year you're seeing more and more work be put out through these government-wide acquisition vehicles. I mean, Alliant is one that certainly has been very active for us. This year we were fortunate to win one of the vehicles called CIO SP3 for the
right.
National
mm-hmm.
Institute of Health, and that's a big one that a lot of healthcare-related or NIH-related acquisitions will be put through. We won, back to cyber, we won the DoD Cyber Crime Center contract earlier this year through the Alliant vehicle. So these are very important. We have to be a part of them, and we see that customers are putting a lot of business through them.
And another, you know, I'm going down my list for you, Paul. Another area I wanted to talk about real quickly, or not real quickly, but just generally, you mentioned in the first segment that a little bit about healthcare IT, and Lockheed is focusing on that area as well. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're doing in that area and where you see that market going?
Sure. you know, I mean, healthcare is one of those national priorities where we really have to try to bend that cost curve, because right now it's headed up at least a 45-degree slope. So significant year-over-year increase, and we need to kind of bend that down. And we certainly believe, as do a lot of other of the large integrators, that applying information technology can help to solve some of those problems. And really doing it in an integrated fashion. You know, it can't be that we bring some little software tool and into the doctor's office and that solves all the problems. I'm talking about, you know, large scale integration between, you know, the payers, the providers, you know, the hospitals, et cetera, where information is shared seamlessly across them. And we have a constant awareness of the patient's medical history and records. So that's the kind of thing that we'd like to be involved in and are working in of how to do that. We also have some other things going on, like a rapid DNA evaluation tool that can analyze DNA samples in less than 30 minutes out in the field. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So some pretty neat things going on, everything from integration down to the product level.
Right. And Paul, right now we do have to take our last break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with Paul Lemo, Vice President, Strategy and Business Development, Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Paul Lemo. Paul is Vice President for Strategy and Business Development, Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions. And you know, Paul, you know, usually in this last segment when I'm talking to some, you know, folks from industry in particular, but government folks too, we just sort of get a sense of where you think things have been, because that informs the future, and from my perspective, and just, you know, what you see as big trends, what you would fix or not fix if you were king for a day of the procurement system. So, you know, just from that perspective, you know, you've been in the business for 25 years now, and you started as, you know, working as an engineer, and now you're focusing on sort of strategic direction of IS and GS. You know, what are some of the biggest changes you've seen over that time? I guess maybe even in where the procurement system has gone, and what are some of the biggest challenges you see? You know, from my perspective, one, if I'll give you an example, and you can tell me what you think, but I still think requirements development is one of the biggest challenges the government faces in terms of being able to clearly articulate what it wants to you as a contractor.
Yeah.
And that feeds into everything. That leads to best outcomes, efficient, effective, and especially in technology, that remains a huge challenge. I'd be interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, the interesting thing is a lot of probably what I'll talk about is related to the budget, right? When the budget's
right.
Up, things go in a certain direction. As the budget's head down, they go in other directions. And, you know, looking back, when I joined the industry, there was a lot of government-funded research and development, a lot of cost-plus contracts, you know, a lot of proprietary system development. You know, that all has changed over the years. I mean, obviously, even more recently, we're moving into many more fixed-price contracts. Although I agree with you that the requirements aren't necessarily any better defined,
right?
Which make it difficult for industry, you know, to sign up for fixed price contracts if the requirements are still sort of cost plus type requirements.
Yes,
that
right.
are loosely
They're
defined.
Unclear, and that's an allocation of risk issue there when you've got a price to assess the risk, and uncertainty creates risk, right?
Exactly, exactly. So that's what we're dealing with. You know, I think from a system development, we went from proprietary, as I said, to commercial off the shelf. You know, now it's offering things as a service, anything as a service, right? Software solutions, infrastructure. That's kind of where we are kind of today and certainly going to be in the next, you know, 3 to 4
right,
years.
Right, with the cloud, like cloud as a service,
exactly.
Essentially, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of government-funded investment earlier in my career. You know, today, you have to show up with products pretty well developed and prototyped into these competitions. So industry is spending a lot more investment to try to come into these competitions prepared with solutions and products as compared to prior years. And, of course, that puts pressure on us because that takes money away from actually bidding additional programs.
Sure.
You know, we have a fixed pool of money that we can use to work new programs that's affordable within our rate structure that we build to the government. And the more you spend on actually developing a product, then the less, you know, you can bid on new programs.
And it seems to me when you describe that, there's a couple challenges the government needs to think about from my perspective. And is that, number one, is like, how do you better leverage the development that a company like Lockheed, across the platform that a company like Lockheed Martin, IS&GS has done? And the flip side is the government buying intelligently in the sense of, are there too, you know, are there too many contracts out there that you are being, you know, sort of essentially forced to bid on? Because, you know, the old issue, and I hear it all the time, is that, you know, Agency X is going to go out with their own IDIQ contract. Do I bid on it or not? Well, I can't afford not to bid on it because I might be locked out of a market.
Exactly.
Right. And exactly. That's just, there's a couple, the flip side of that, what I'm hearing there is, from my perspective, what I take out of it are things that the government needs to think about.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly look at our utilization on IDIQ vehicles that we bid on. I mean, you're right. I mean, if it's out there and it's with a major agency that we want to do business with, we're going to go bid that vehicle and hopefully win a position on it. When you look back, you know, several years later and you look at the utilization, some of them are low. You know, it just, the work hasn't materialized. Either, you know, the task orders aren't in the areas that we want to service, or there just hasn't been work applied to the GWAC. So I think there's some validity to that point.
So I'm going to make you king for the day, the procurement system. I get my guests this question, and I know this is your view. But if you could make one recommendation regard to procurement system to make it more efficient and effective, what would that be?
Yeah, this really goes back to your point about requirements. It's dialogue between industry and government needs to happen earlier and more often. And unfortunately, in today's environment where there's a lot more protests, a lot more oversight of how the procurement and the RFPs are written from, you know, OSD or the whatever civil government agency, we're going in the opposite direction, in my view. I think we're talking a little bit less today, particularly in some areas, about the procurement and the requirements up front than we were, you know, years ago.
Right. I agree with you 100%. When I was in government 28 years ago, there was a lot more communication, you know, inappropriate communication, yeah, and communication consistent with the rules that better informed both the government and the potential competitors about requirements and that sort of thing. And I know the administration is trying to address that through the Mythbusters memo and encouraging people to communicate and dialogue. But I think there's, you know, that's one of those areas where, you know, more work needs to be done. And it's something that, you know, I try to focus on and talk about whenever I can, that the importance of that communication. I would have to agree with you. That's a big issue.
What I would tell you is we're working a couple of large procurements in the UK right now, and their process is very interesting. I mean, it's a lengthy process. These are going to be multi-year, but they don't get a protest at the end. So if you compare that in the U.S., where maybe you could do it in 1 year, but now you have a protest that's going to drag you out another 6 months, it may be the same. And what they do in the U.K. is every step of the way, there is a very detailed discussion on the requirements and your solution, lots of feedback coming, and they do it with all the competitive teams. They ensure that it's equal. So, you know, my view is that it can be done. There can be more dialogue within the rules, and everybody gets an understanding of what the requirements are, really what they are, and really what your solution is. So the government gets to ask you a lot more questions so they know what they're buying. Right. And here I just don't see that.
Right.
Much.
And the rules, to your point, the rules provide that flexibility to do that. And I would submit, as someone who worked both on the government, you know, defending against bid protests and then worked in the private sector for a law firm as well, oftentimes a protest is a result of that, the very lack of communication and understanding on the part of a losing, you know, offeror as to why they really lost.
Exactly.
Or what was really important to the government. That, I mean, that's, there's a lot of bid protests, frankly, from my perspective, are really about that issue of lack of communication, lack of understanding what was really important to the government or why I really lost.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah. So we have about a minute left, Paul, and thanks. It's been a great conversation, a lot of great information. And I just want to give you, you know, one final thought. I know you, for King for the Day, you said communication. I wholeheartedly agree. I think that is right on the money, that. And that goes to my issue of requirements development. You know, I just looking forward a little bit more. Do you see any, you know, besides the fiscal issues and challenges, is there any other specific issue that you would identify that is going to be big in the commercial marketplace? Is it, you know, one of the things that I'm concerned about is, you know, is reducing access to commercial products and services that you with regard to oversight and new government unique requirements. Mm-hmm. For example, is that something you're seeing, or is there another issue?
I guess one is a challenge or a worry, and that is that as the commercial market continues to accelerate and move even faster and faster, you know, will the government agencies be able to keep up in the IT space? And you might say, well, is that a problem if they don't? I think it is, particularly with things like bring your own device. When you have your employees using the latest IT technology, but perhaps your infrastructure and your backbone can't accept that or can't integrate with that, you know, that could be a challenge. So I think that's something we're going to have to manage our way through over the next few years with, you know, just a continued explosion of information technology.
Right, and you and Lockheed Martin you're sort of strategically, you are that connection, right, as an integrator and what you do. You know, the examples you gave of the Security Intelligence Center, the Insight Center, you are seeing that commercial, you know, that rapid commercial change in technologies, and you're trying to, you are providing those to the government, and that's a great point in terms of, you know, the rapid change in the commercial marketplace and making sure the government gets access to those changes.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank my guest, Paul Lemo. Paul is Vice President for Strategy and Business Development, Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions, for joining me today. You've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.